TSN. And before we get to hockey talk, whoa, Craig, how is your face from this pickleball injury? Like, what happened?
Well, I was chasing after a ball. I'm never going to give up on a play that I'm trying to win, my competitive spirit. And didn't quite get there, and I tumbled. And as I rolled, my sunglasses cut me. But I'll tell you what, pickleball reveals toughness and character, and that's what it did for me.
You know what's funny is that I saw it. I couldn't stop laughing, but this kind of confirms some concerns I've had about your pickleball career. Your footwork, I've heard it's not crisp, it's not sharp or quick enough. Are you going to make adjustments in your training in the off season, be ready to move a little bit better next pickleball season, Craig Button?
The next time you have your defenseman training camps going, I'm going to be there. Because the footwork that you help those young kids with, Jason, is footwork that will help me. So I'm all about improvement.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Craig, let's get right into it and talk about Dylan Holloway. He signs his contract. I don't think a big surprise when you look what happened with Caulfield. But, you know, how would you handle this guy knowing that he's got the broken thumb and, you know, where the Oilers are maybe, you know, looking, heading towards the playoffs? How would you handle this, you know, pretty important prospect for the Oilers?
Yeah, you're right. He is important. And I think that he's going to be a really good player for the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, I think the first thing, they got him signed. And he signed and he knows where he's at. Now he can move forward. Now it becomes a question of his thumb healing. And, you know, will it benefit him to get into some AHL games and go down there and see what he's capable of doing as preparation? You know, you test yourself at different levels. You now get an understanding of how quick pro hockey is, how strong the players are. And really now it's Dylan's focus is about getting, you know, as prepared as possible to come in next September when training camp opens, or if it's after that, you know, ready to compete for a spot with just better knowledge and better intel on the pro game. So, you know, that's where it's at. And obviously he has to heal. That thumb has to be healed. You know, nobody's going to put him in a position where he's compromised in that regard. But I think those are the steps. So if he can, I think it would be really beneficial for Dylan to get some games under his belt at the American Hockey League level if the thumb is healthy.
Craig, the draft, of course, is months away still. However, you look at the amount of, or lack of games some of the CHL players have played when you compare it to USHL players or NCAA players. From a scout perspective, how many viewings did you need of a player, Craig, like this year to really feel comfortable? Is it more of a challenge for a scout when you've got some guys have only played minimal, in some cases very few games? And I know you watched them last year, but you've talked about this. You're like, lots of guys can change from 16 to 17. Like it's a big gap for some players. How is there a disadvantage for CHL players this year just because there's so few viewings for a lot of these guys?
Well, I'm going to talk in a general sense. I mean, you watch players progress, from September to December, from December to February, February to May. And, you know, and that's just within the span of a year. A lot of these players have not been able to play what I consider to be in an environment that, allows them to grow with the coaching, with the challenges of other players. Yeah, we can look and say, oh, yeah, this player went and played here, but it's been a year, and a lot can change, and a lot does change in a year's time. I've used the example of Jack Quinn. Jack Quinn was the eighth overall pick last year for the Buffalo Sabres. Now, I watched Jack play at the younger ages, and, you know, you watch him and you see him and you're looking at him. And I remember going in the fall of 2019 and watching it. And it was like, whoa, he's really improved. Wow. You know, it's very interesting. Watch him. I think I watched him three times. And then I went to the U-17 and James Boyd, who is the manager in Ottawa, you know, we got talking and I asked him, I said, I need to tell me about Jack a little bit. I was really impressed. And he was glowing. Now you go back and you watch him in December, you watch him down, and it was like, wow. Like, you know, you can really see those real significant jumps. And, you know, there's Jack Quinns out there. I don't think there's going to be a Jack Quinn that we know about going high in the draft like Jack Quinn, because there hasn't been the opportunity to watch him. One of Jason Shrudwick's former teammates, we watched Roma Ginla play as a 16-year-old on a Memorial Cup champion team. And you're identifying him, you're watching him. It took us a lot longer to not, I don't know if assessing Jerome was the right word, but to really feel confident, okay, this is what he was. He was rated the 26th best player, I believe, by Central Scouting when he went into his draft. It was a lockout year. A lot of teams didn't scout, so they didn't have the opportunity. But it took us a little bit longer to get to that comfort level. I think that's how scouting works. It's over time, being able to assess them. You're only going to be able to use the information you have, but I can guarantee you it's not going to lead to the same level of confidence for NHL scouts going into this year's draft. It not only will it not, it can't, because you haven't been able to watch those players over a longer period of time with those really significant growth, those periods of growth in their game, and the challenges that give you and help them feel that they can demonstrate their capabilities.
So in this situation, how much more important is it for a scout or management group to have relationships with coaches or assistant coaches or whatever to kind of get this group and say, hey, like, player X has taken a big step forward in this way. And relationships more importantly than just like buddies. I'm talking about people that you trust and respect their judgment on players. Like, is it hard? Because you might go into a meeting, I'm guessing, as a scout, say, hey, like, I've only seen player X play 4 times, but this guy I trust tells me he's really taken a step forward. Is it important to have a relationship? Is it difficult to bring that kind of information to a chat at a draft table when you're trying to rank your players?
Yeah, Jason, I think it's important, regardless of the situation. I think it becomes even more important now because of the gaps. And, I know when I was working in scouting and player evaluation and player personnel, we wanted to go back and even talk to U14 coaches and U16 coaches. Did this player demonstrate this at that point in time? And just to get it was a small piece of the puzzle, but it was a piece that completed the picture and gave you a little bit more confidence about what you were seeing. So what you just described, I think it's going to become more important this year to be able to have those relationships, to have those trusted relationships from people that say, you're right. Or, did you consider this? And you know what? I think you're missing that. Those become really enlightening in terms of your evaluation. I think they become ever more important in this type of a draft.
Well, it's interesting because, I remember a conversation I had with Ryan Huska, who's now assistant coach with Calgary. But, at the time I was playing in the NHL and he was coaching in Kelowna, and I just called him and we always talk about players, and he's like, Strutty, you got to take a look at Tyson Barrie. Not that I was a general manager or anything. And like, I didn't really know a lot of the young kids. I was pretty busy with my own career. And he's like, honestly, guy, this guy is, he's going to be, a player that you're going to want to have on your team and this and that. And he was adamant on him. And I think he went in the third or fourth round, if I remember correctly. But yeah, he was so sure. He's like, teams are going to miss out on this guy, and it's something I'll never forget, because he knows, like, he had him for what had been a few years before his draft pick. And to me it was like such a strong endorsement, and I don't think I appreciated time as a player, Craig. I wasn't really in that mode, but now when I hear someone endorse someone that strongly, especially in a private conversation, I'm like, okay, I got to take a step back and really see what this guy's bringing. And I'm guessing those types of conversations are hoping to be had by managers that maybe aren't seeing the CHL much this year.
Yeah, you have to have those. And to me, I mean, I don't have to sit here and tell you that Ryan Huska is legitimate. He is. And so when you have those trusted voices, those trusted opinions, and from legitimate people, I mean, you have to pay attention. And you have to pay attention to an even greater extent when it doesn't necessarily align with your own view. You got to take mm-hmm. that step back. You talk about Ryan telling you about when you were still playing. We hired a gentleman by the name of Hasse Edlund in Sweden, and we really liked him. Alfie Dahlin had recommended him, and we, and Alfie is, you go back, or, you know, Alfie is phenomenal. And so he recommends him. We go and spend the time. We're really satisfied with Hase. He had played in the SHL. He had played in Frölunda. And so we're coming down in the draft and assessing players. He kept telling us about this player. He says, this guy's a good player. I'm telling you, I played with him. He's good. He's really good. Alfie's telling us, listen to Hase, right? And he, despite the fact that he was new, he had credibility. And yet we were so stupid. We were so stupid that we didn't trust him. You want to know who the player was?
Who's that?
Daniel Alfredsson. How stupid were we?
Yeah, he turned out all right. I think he had a pretty good run.
And we were being told he was good. Like, and we trusted him and everything. And like other people in Sweden, oh, yeah, you got a great guy here. We hired him. We knew we had a good guy. And yet here we are like, oh, yeah, okay, we're not going to listen to him. Like, oh.
It's got to be hard, though, I'm guessing, as we're joined by Craig Button, that when you're around that draft table, you know, and you know, everyone gets together. I recognize this might be a little different this year. But everyone's got to have their guy. You know, this is the guy we got to take. So, you know, is it seniority? Is it by the passion of their conviction? How do you know, which guys to really identify? Okay, we're in the fourth round and whoever, Danny Alfredsson's there. We're going to take this guy over top of whoever, Ethan Bear, who's there as well. You know what I mean? Like, how do you gauge those conversations?
Well, those conversations are had long before you get to the draft table. Because if you're having those conversations at the draft table, Jason, you are completely unprepared.
Okay.
You have to, and those discussions are over time. To be able to listen to and to go and do the background work and to do the and get more information and to really, like I say, complete the picture, it doesn't happen at the draft table. And when you have a group of people that you really value and you work alongside, it's never about one person. It's about, we reached that point. You know, I told you the story about Jerome Iginla, and we watched him a lot, and all of us were watching him, and it just came to a point where we're going, that's where he goes and that's where he belongs. A couple of years later, We were watching Brendan Morrow, and we didn't have to watch Brendan Morrow as much as we watched Jerome, because we were all satisfied that, this is what Brendan was. And so we could go and spend our time in other places too. So the process has to be during the season and over the course of time, because it also saves you time in terms of evaluating players that don't give you the same certainty. And it's not about ranking them. And if you do it over time and you keep working it's kind of like, higher, lower, who goes here? And you're doing it over time. You get to the draft table, guaranteed. Anybody that gets to the draft table and there's these big arguments, unprepared. They're an unprepared group. I've seen it lots. I'm not suggesting that it isn't, but that is a demonstration of unpreparedness. It has to happen long before. And so it's not just about seniority. It's about different voices. I worked with a gentleman, and I think, did you play with Kenny Jernander?
No, but I know him. I know him, yep.
Yeah. So his dad, Bob, longtime high school coach in Minnesota, he had a line, and he used this. He said, listen to the dissenting voice. It may be the voice that saves all our butts. So we never dismissed the outlier. We always said, okay, let's take a step back and understand what is being said here. And we had a great group, and everybody valued it. It was about us being right. It wasn't about me getting my guy.
Craig, always good to catch up with you, man. We appreciate it. Have yourself a lovely weekend, and just watch out for the pickleball courts, okay?
Well, let me just tell you guys this. I got my stitches out today, and I have been cleared to play today. I've been cleared to play.
Oh, all right. So you're off the IR.
I'm off the IR.
Oh, well, hey, good luck. Like they say, anytime you come off the IR, Craig, you need a little bit of warm-up. So don't just go in there fast. You know, maybe
I am.
Maybe walk around the court a little bit first.
And maybe I'll put on the GoPro just in case there's another spill. Jason can get the video of what needs to be
just worked
on.
Yeah, get your opponent to wear the GoPro. That's what I want to see.
I suggest a helmet. I think a helmet's up what you need. Good luck, big guy.
Thanks.